Well, this is the last week of our summer series on how to develop and maintain a friendship with God. God is absolutely a loving Father, and we are all His sons and daughters. But as we have been saying throughout this series, it's healthy to think of God in more than just one way, and to picture God as a friend who walks with you and shares your life with you is a really good thing to do for your spiritual well-being. But as we've also been saying, a friendship with God is like any other friendship. It's a lifelong journey, and it takes effort, commitment, and constant attention to the relationship to keep it strong. And so over the last 5 weeks, we've been looking at five important qualities that are essential to a fulfilling friendship with God. If you missed any of those episodes, then you can catch up or you can watch them on our website at sthillary.org. Tonight, in this last episode, we're going to look and turn our attention to one final feature of a healthy friendship with the Lord. And I think this one might be the hardest one for most of us human beings, most of us mere mortals. And that quality is patience. Good friends are patient with each other. One of my favorite things to do, my favorite job as a priest, one of my favorite jobs, is to prepare couples for marriage. I just love working with these young people who are getting ready to spend their entire lives together. It's so uplifting. They're so optimistic. They're so excited. It makes me feel young again. As part of the process, we ask them to complete a questionnaire with about 170 questions on topics ranging from all kinds of things like household budgeting, financial management, child-rearing philosophies, lifestyle choices, and personality styles, all kinds of things. And then we have a discussion about it. But one of my favorite questions, and I take that back, my favorite question of all those 170 questions is this one, and I find it rather amusing. The question asks the couples whether there is anything about their future spouse that they find annoying. Those of you who are married right now are probably forming a huge long list in your brain, but you have to understand that the kids who come to me to get married, they're almost always still in the romance phase of their relationship. And so the answer to that question is almost always no. No, there's nothing annoying or frustrating, even the tiniest bit irritating about my future spouse. Everything he or she does is cute and adorable and funny. So when I talk to them about this, I try to push them a little bit. I'm like, come on, guys. It's not healthy to not find anything annoying about your partner. Isn't there one little tiny little thing that every once in a while, you know, just gets under your skin? They just look at each other with doe eyes and hold hands and say, no, Father, not a thing. It's absolutely adorable, and I love admire their optimism and positivity. But we all know, and I think deep down they know, that can't last, because human relationships are hard. It takes work. We all have our little quirks, don't we, and our little idiosyncrasies. I imagine that I might have one or two of my own. And so in preparing for this homily, I decided to reach out to a small group of people whom I thought were my friends and ask them to, you know, just give me paint a general picture, you know. Do I have any, you know, anything that ever, you know, is irritating or gets annoying for you? And I mean, I sent them a text and I said, I'm doing this homily and I really need your total honesty, no holds barred. Tell me just really how weird I am. And I really meant it. I mean, I did. I even sent the text with a smiley face. Total honesty. And boy, that's what I got. One person wrote back and said, well, you know, I never text lists that long. Another person did, and the list was longer than the Sears catalog. I won't bore you with all of my so-called oddities pointed out to me by my former friends, but I will give you the top five, and just in case you're interested. I am admittedly a fussy eater. If you've had me over to your house, you know that's true. I'm a fussy eater. But what my friends say is that becomes embarrassing when we go out to restaurants because I'm apparently high maintenance, right? And it's embarrassing because I'm always asking for substitutions and this and that. And I want to know the name of the fish and all of that. But that's number five. Number four, in the rectory, the church office, I require all the staff and visitors to put their dirty dishes into the dishwasher where they can be properly sanitized, as opposed to washing them by hand. Now, why this is irritating, I have no idea, because I'm simply saving them time, but nonetheless, I have been dubbed dishwasher dictator. Number three is a badge of honor that I wear also proudly. I have been called a coffee diva because I will only drink Italian roast coffees with frothed milk. And I think you can agree with me that life is too short to drink bad coffee, right? Number two, I am a bossy germaphobe. When we go out to restaurants and with a group of people, I insist on my own bread basket so as to prevent hand-to-hand germ transfer. Now, they find this annoying and embarrassing, but obviously they've forgotten the lessons of COVID-19, so I don't know. I don't know what that's about. All right, number one, Father Roger's most annoying trait is I am an arachnophobe. I am so deathly scared of spiders that I make everyone around me, if I see one, pick the spider up in a glass or something and take him outside so as not to harm the poor defenseless creature, but I will not touch him. This just actually happened today. Where's Victoria? She works for us. This just happened today. We saw a spider, and I screamed like a little girl. And I'm like, Victoria, get the spider. She refused. Not sure how much longer she'll be working here. No, I'm just kidding, Victoria. I'm just kidding. Anyway, I guess like everybody else, I occasionally have annoying habits that get under people's skin. The problem happens when these funny quirks turn into fundamental flaws. You know, when harmless eccentricities start to grate on the relationship and charming but odd traits just really start to cause serious conflicts. And when that happens, you have one of two choices. On the one hand, you can either get angry and frustrated, you can demand the behavior stops and issue ultimatums, you can respond with passive-aggressive behavior, it's my favorite, or on the other hand, you can ask for what you need, establish reasonable boundaries, and work with the other person to set mutual expectations. And when those expectations are not met, and when those boundaries are violated, and they will be, it is the perfect opportunity for you to practice patience. Patience. The Bible says that we should put on, like clothing, put on heartfelt compassion and kindness and humility and gentleness and patience, bearing with one another. Good friends are patient with each other. They put up with and endure the shortcomings and the failings of the other person out of love, because that's really the only way to be patient with another human being is through love. And this same principle is true in our friendship with God. God is patient with us. We need to be patient with Him. You know, throughout this series, in various weeks of this series, we've talked about the need for mutual support, trust, and interest in the relationship with God. We've looked at why we need to speak honestly to God about our lives. And we've talked about why we need to take an interest in what He thinks is important. And we've covered a lot of qualities, and I'm going to summarize them for you at the end. We've got a little gift before you go out. But all of these qualities that we've talked about actually work in both directions. God trusts us with our lives. We should trust him. God reveals hidden mysteries to us. We should share honestly with him about our lives. God takes an interest in our lives. We should take an interest in his. God seeks to fix the relationship. When we break it, we should at least meet him halfway and make amends. And it's the same thing with patience. God is patient with us. We should be patient with him. But patience is something that's hard for us as human beings. And it's also hard for us to be patient with God. There are people out there, and this may describe you to some degree, maybe just subconsciously, maybe deep down. I know it describes me somehow, some ways, in some times of my life. There are some people who are angry with God because of what's happened to them or a loved one in the past that didn't seem fair. You may grow impatient with God because you keep asking him for what you think you need and want, and you're not getting it. And you think he doesn't love you or care or even listen. Maybe you've become irritated. And you've become irritated with God because he does act pretty slowly. Even in the things in my life, even the things that I've prayed for and have received, it takes a while, and I don't know why. I sometimes joke, well, you know, he is an old man. But, I mean, we can become impatient. And some people even harbor resentment deep down against God. Maybe they feel like he's punishing them for the suffering they've gone through. It's hard to be patient sometimes, but God is patient with us always. And that's the point of the readings tonight. In the first reading, it says, though you are master of might, God, you judge with clemency and with great leniency, with much lenience, you govern us. And the same theme is in the parable tonight that Jesus told in the gospel. One of the parables he told the crowd was the parable of the weeds and the wheat. And it goes like this. The kingdom of heaven is maybe likened to a man who sowed good seed in his field. Now later, Jesus goes and he describes this to his disciples, the meaning of the parable. And he says that the man who sows the seed is Jesus. The field in which the seed is sowed is the world, and the good seed is us when we love God, trust him, obey him, try to live our lives according to his laws, and try to live in his kingdom every day. That's the good seed. But then, as we heard in the parable, while everyone was sleeping, an enemy came and sowed weeds all through the wheat and then went off. Now, these weeds were a plant called darnel. You can see it pictured here. Darnel, at certain stages of growth, looked almost identical to wheat. It was hard to tell it apart. And even worse, darnel was a poisonous plant. It could wipe out the entire crop of wheat. So this was a dangerous turn of events for the farmer, and an all too common one. So common that there were laws back then punishing anyone who tried to sabotage a neighboring farmer by planting darnel in his field. Even more dangerous than that was that as the weeds grew, their roots would become intertwined with the wheat. So not only could you not tell them apart, not only was the darnel poisonous, but now their roots were entangled. And so as the parable continues, Jesus says, when the crop grew and bore fruit, the weeds appeared as well. Now, you may be wondering what the weeds are, and Jesus describes that also later for his disciples. The weeds are us. Again, when we don't believe in God, trust in God, live our lives according to his laws, when we don't strive to live in his kingdom every day, we become the weeds. So the man's workers come to him, and they say, did you not sow good seed in your field? Where have all the weeds come from? Now, when you read this, maybe you see what I see. There's a kind of, like even a hint of reproach in that question. It's like they're saying, hey, boss, did you mix up the seeds? What'd you do wrong? Like, you messed all this up. And that's kind of like, I think, our impatience with God. We blame God for the evil and the suffering in the world. It's tempting to do that. We criticize God for the state of the world, as if somehow it were his fault. God, why don't you come down here and fix everything that we messed up? Don't you love us? Don't you care about us anymore? Well, look at what the man said to his workers. An enemy has done this. See, it's not God's fault, the state of the world. God sowed good seed everywhere. It's the powers of darkness who have set up strongholds in our lives, strongholds of selfishness and addiction, strongholds of dysfunction and self-loathing, strongholds of despair, strongholds that have claimed enemy territory in this world and refused to let go, strongholds that seek to sow doubt and dissension in our faith and our friendship with God, strongholds that just hold on tenaciously. But at the end of the parable, the workers say to him, do you want us to go out and pull up these weeds? And he's like, no, because if you pull them up, you might uproot the wheat as well. It was too dangerous. The wheat is too valuable. Let them grow together until harvest. At the end of time, good and evil will be separated out, and all those strongholds will come crumbling down forever. We just have to be patient with God because he is patient with us. In fact, that's the whole point of the parable, that God waits patiently. Every time one of those strongholds tries to keep us down, tries to alienate us from God, tries to keep us in conflict with other people, God waits patiently for us to change, to do better, to find another way, to switch gears, to embark on a new path, a path of love and forgiveness and reconciliation and righteousness and goodness and patience. God is patient with us. Let us do our best to be patient with him.